Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is November 8, 2019. And holy WASD Day. Happy Friday. Kevin, you like WASDs on Fridays, don't you?
Yes, they just make my day, especially this crazy week we're having.
Oh, my gosh.
So much news, so much information coming out about all the harvest issues in the Red River Valley, harvest issues up in Canada and Alberta.
Oh, my God.
And then they throw a WASD on a Friday when we want to go out and have a nice, you know,
leisurely
lunch.
It's nice here today.
It is beautiful today. We should be out sitting on a deck having an enjoyable lunch. But not today, because we have WASD report and it's super busy.
Yes. Well, in case you don't know, and this is your first time listening to our podcast, that's Kevin Combs, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. And we're also joined by Nicole Thomas, Vice President of Information Services. And I'm Mike Coughlin, President CEO. So, hey, let's do this. Let's talk about the WASD report. And because we have so much, we're going to pass all the sports talk that we normally do. We're going to go straight into it today.
Straight into it.
Straight into it. So we'll start today talking with Kevin on sugar, and then we'll move over to Nicole on corn and corn sweetener. So
let's get down and dirty. Talk about all the frozen tundra and mud.
Oh, my gosh. So what do we got? What did the USDA do today?
Well, it's not only about what the USDA did today. It's what we've been hearing about the harvest. And, you know, we've hearing announcements that in Canada, Rogers Sugar has completely discontinued their harvest operations. Their production's going to end up being like 70,000 metric tons instead of 120,000 tons in Canada.
Oh, my God.
Severe problem, Canada. Right? And that's just exemplifies what we're seeing, because in Red River Valley, American Crystal, the largest co-op on beets, is about 65, maybe 70% harvested as we speak.
Okay.
And there's rumors that they're talking about discontinuing harvest operations there as well.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. So you're talking about severe amount of acreage that could be abandoned and not harvest. We're already looking at hearing expectations of 60,000, 65,000 acres. Now you could come up and you may see abandonment in the Red River Valley up over 150,000 acres overall. So it's huge. We don't know what's going to happen. They may continue. They may keep fighting to get as many acres out of the ground. There's been years where farmers have been able to pull beets out of the ground in December, but it sounds like it's so bad and the weather conditions continue to be bad that they're looking at halting operations potentially here. So,
oh my gosh. So what do the numbers say?
So the USDA lowered the beet crop 467,000 tons. Thank you.
Tons
raw value.
400 towns gone.
Yes, just because they didn't have sugar beets. The towns just folded up, Mike.
Geez.
No, 467,000 short tons raw value down to 4.588 million short tons.
Oh, my God. When's the last time we had a 4.5 crop?
I think you have to go back to 2009-10 for the crop to be this low.
Ouch.
Quite some time ago, we had about 2-3 years of bad crops at that period of time, and it was pretty bad. This is obviously a very different year because this is basically all acreage not getting harvested, sugar content being lower from all the cold weather, not only in the Red River Valley, but we also experienced a lot of that in the plains as well. So the USDA, I think, was pretty aggressive as far as the decline, but depending on those acreage numbers, this could get worse.
Okay.
You could run some numbers in the model and start taking out, you know, all the acres that could potentially be lost here. And we could see that number closer to 4.4 million tons instead of the 4.6 million tons.
Okay. So, what else did they do? Did they do anything to, they did something to the cane crop too, didn't they?
They did adjust cane crop as well.
Okay.
A little bit of a surprise. Louisiana's crop was lowered 105,000 tons for 1920. However, they did put some early harvest back into 1819. But basically, you're looking at a 75,000 ton reduction for the state of Louisiana. And most of that was based on some yield and sugar recovery being lower than what they were expecting for this crop. So I think there's still some potential. May not be quite that bad. You may see them pick up a little bit of this decline in the next couple months. Maybe you start seeing yields get a little higher as they get further along into the crop and get to the more mature cane. But, you know, we'll see. Factor those two things together. We did have a little bit more supply, like I said, coming into the year, but they took out 524,000 tons out of supply. So that raises the big question. Right now, we're now looking at 10.5% stocks to use ratio.
Ouch.
Ouch. We know they want to run at 13.5%. We need to get a lot more sugar back into the supply to make this sugar program work.
Where's it going to come from, Kevin?
And that brings up another interesting question.
All right.
Normally, you know, 2 months ago, I would have said, well, of course it's going to come from Mexico.
Yes.
Now we got the problem with the Department of Commerce having to vacate the amended suspension agreements. What's going to happen? How are they going to run the program? What's the USDA going to do? What tools are they going to use? I think they'll try to run it the same way. Okay. I think you'll see Department of Commerce try to figure out the best way to reinstate the amended suspension agreements.
Okay.
They'll work with the court. They'll work with sugar industry. They'll work with Mexico to try to make it work. And from what we're hearing, Mexico is pretty happy with the way the amended suspension agreements were going to work. So I think those parties can come, and they just got to formalize it and do it proper this time to make it work. But there's no guarantees it's going to be identical at this point in time, or that, you know, something else won't happen over time. But I think the USDA, because of the emergency of this situation, they're going to have to try to keep it in line with some sort of rules, and they'll probably try to dictate and follow as much of the amended suspension agreements as possible.
Anything else?
Yes.
What?
Mexico is having a little bit of problem on their own right.
Oh, God.
But it's the opposite. Instead of being too wet and cold, they had drought.
Uh-oh. Kind of like California.
Kind of like California. Well,
not now, but
yeah, we don't have rain until now.
I already took out my lawn.
All right. Good for you. That's why your neighbors were complaining again. Great. Okay. But anyway, Mexico's having a drought, and you could see their refined sugar production not be as readily available. And we may need more refined sugar because our cane refining capacity in the United States gets pretty tight in the summer during peak sugar demand. And with the lower beet crops, we're going to put more demand on the cane refineries.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So I think the USDA will be looking at what they need to do as far as bringing in some additional refined quota as well.
Okay.
And Mexico would normally probably be that answer. But this year, five of their mills are up located in the northeast portion of Mexico where the drought is the most severe.
Ouch.
Some of those mills are reporting production could be off as much as 40% versus last year.
Okay.
That takes a big hit on refined sugar availability. So who knows where they're going to do it. It's going to take a couple months to assess. But hopefully they're able to react real quick, make sure the sugar supply is readily available for everyone and we don't create any situations of shortages and trying to find sugar.
Okay. Anything else on the sugar front? I think you'd call this a perfect storm.
Oh, but ending. That was a really bad joke, Mike.
Sorry. Well, you want another one?
No, I don't think
one
I do.
More. Give me one more.
All right,
okay.
One more.
All right, audience out there. If you're a current client of ours, Kevin is throwing you a life preserver. Give him a call if you had any questions on what this means to pricing. And if you aren't covered for next year, call us because we might be able to help you or at least guide you to the next step. If you're not a client, what a perfect time to talk to Kevin.
There you go.
He can help you.
We'd love to talk about all the emergency plans, things that could be looking at in case supplies are problematic
this
spring and summer.
Yeah. My joke was really flat, but don't worry. I won't quit my day job.
It's all right.
Good. Anything else on sugar?
That's it on sugar.
All right. Well, let's move on over to Nicole on the corn and corn sweetener side. Nicole.
Well, Mike, you know, today's WASD was relatively quiet as far as corn was concerned. Other than the USDA reversing course on corn yield. And I think, you know, most people were surprised by the upward revision to yield in the October report, albeit relatively minor. But today, USDA revised that number lower to 167 bushels per acre. So we're getting a little closer to my estimate of 166. Yay.
Okay.
Almost there. But the impact on production was only a little more than 100 million bushels. And that was effectively offset with lower demand in every category. So both feed and residual and ethanol were revised lower by 25 million bushels each. and exports were reduced by 50 million bushels. Now, I don't disagree with the ethanol or export category adjustments. Starting with exports, cumulative exports lagged last year's pace by about 63%. So it would make sense to assume that at least a 10% decline year on year for that category would be likely. And depending on how things shape up in the coming weeks, they may even reduce that further. And as it relates to ethanol, I also support that change on the balance sheet, mostly because we've got a lot of idle production at domestic facilities, and we're still waiting for some of these export opportunities for ethanol to pan out. Now, there has been some indication of efforts to get Mexico to approve E10 blends in some major Mexican cities, which obviously the U.S. ethanol producers would love to have as a place to send some ethanol.
Sure.
And then also China is struggling to meet its proposal to ramp up ethanol consumption to somewhere around 5 billion gallons. They were supposed to hit that goal in 2020. That seems unlikely without some sort of major increase to ethanol imports. Now, today, you wouldn't see that because there's a 70% duty on imported ethanol within China.
Ooh.
However, if something like that could show up in, say, a U.S.-China trade agreement, something that the administration would want to accomplish to appease the domestic ethanol interest, including the farmers themselves, then we might have something. But without more exports or definitively more favorable domestic policy for ethanol, the category will likely continue to show this weakness. Now, the interesting change for me was the reduction of corn use for feed. And that one was surprising because one would think there's support via strong livestock numbers and subsequently good feed demand in the U.S. You know, the livestock inventories look really good right now for most categories, I should say. Broiler type eggs were up by 4% versus last year in the recent broiler hatchery report, a trend that has been relatively consistent for at least the last 6 weeks. And in the most recent quarterly hogs and pigs report, inventories of all hogs and pigs were up 3% as of September 1st. And that was the highest inventory of pigs since estimates began in 1988. And then on top of all that, you still have ASF, African swine fever, ravaging Asian and Eurasian hog populations. And thus far, a good chunk of that demand for those meat protein products is being addressed by supplies from other places. But again, in any trade agreement, I'd expect that category would be one that would be mentioned and might reap the benefit of that. So long story short, I think we might see a reverse course on that category at some point in a future report that could ultimately draw down ending stocks additionally.
Okay.
So, you know, corn sweeteners, I'm going to talk a little bit about corn sweeteners.
Yes.
In that market, you know, usually by this time of year, we're getting closer to wrapping things up. And I would say we're about there for quite a few users.
Okay.
And I think overall, you know, what we've seen this go round is really driven by capacity and wanting to maintain capacity. So things looking reasonably competitive across the board, regardless of what corn-derived product you're referring to. And I would think here that maybe next few weeks here, we'll have a good share of that wrapped up.
Sure.
I know we talked a lot about how quickly things moved in sugar, particularly over the summer months. And I would say, you know, especially with the market opening up a little bit as far as the flat price side is concerned, that we've seen sort of that same effort to get things wrapped up here as well. So for everyone that's still out there figuring things out, do not hesitate to give us a call and talk through it a bit. And at least for now, on the, you know, the corn side of things, you've got a relatively calm market at the moment.
That's corn. Okay, let's shift over to soybeans.
So with soy, at least on the beans, nothing much other than a slight increase to ending stocks. Production was left unchanged at 3.55 billion bushels. That was right in line with analysts' expectations. Crush was lowered minimally by 15 million bushels, still comparable to last year. And exports were unchanged despite what has been pretty strong shipments to China of late. But I can't blame USDA for not putting too much stock in it just yet. And considering that exports have been great relative to last year, but last year exports were pretty poor. So that's something to be considered. And then also globally, Brazil and Argentina are both expecting some decent sized crops, although there has been some dryness in Brazil, worth monitoring as we move forward. But other than that, not much on the bean side. Now for soybean oil, the tight balance sheet just got tighter. Ending stocks dropped by nearly 100 million pounds, but it's all coming from lower production as a result of that crush reduction in the report. So I wouldn't worry too much about that just yet, and that we could see that crush number go higher as the year progresses, especially if meat export demand stays firm and or if the oil yield comes in a little stronger.
Okay.
And also biodiesel demand could be lowered along the way, depending on things like whether those countervailing duties against Argentina are removed and when, because I do believe it will ultimately come, the blender's credit is reinstated.
Okay.
Could play a role in that. In other words, the longer it takes for that to happen, the more likely soy oil usage for that category will come down a bit in future reports. But overall, I do believe the price sentiment for soybean oil remains bullish, at least relative to what we've been seeing here with prices in the high 20s, 20 cents a pound level, leading up to this, to what's been an amazing run-up for the last few months. And there is, it's worth mentioning, there is a decent amount of speculative length in the soybean oil market. Right now, okay, we're around 100,000 contracts net long, as of October 29th, meaning they could complete some profit taking and pull these values down.
Okay.
But in that sense, as a user, I would definitely have an idea of a level that you're comfortable with as sort of pulling the trigger, as the downside may only be another half a cent to a penny at best. So
got it.
That's what we got out of soy.
Oh my gosh, what a crazy week, Kevin and Nicole. I mean, just it's been absolutely nuts. And so those customers or current clients, give us a call. We'll tell you where we think sugar might go, where current pricing is. And if you're not covered for next year, we might be able to help you.
Sure.
And on the corn sweetener side, boy, activity's happening. So give us a call and Nicole can give you a complete rundown and what to expect. So, well, as I always say, let's live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every moment with your friends and family. And until next week, take care, everybody.
See you, everybody.
Bye now.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favel's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favel.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.